Gordon. Gordon going to try to power it up. No. Michael Porter Jr. throws it down. Lots of switching by this very long and versatile Raptor team. Curry got it. Porter for three. Yes. Right over the top of OG. Porter. Can he make another one? You betcha. MP raining long J's here. Murray 6 points in the first half. And a corkscrew. And he's got it there. KCP in the middle of it. Got a 3-on-2. Murray reversing. Yes. Murray lets it go. That's good too. Intercepted by Gordon. Nuggets looking for the lead. Give it to Porter. Cross it. Murray sidesteps. Got it. Nuggets have the lead. Nuggets getting twos. Murray for three. Yes. Murray now. Murray and the Nuggets. 95 seconds remaining. Murray's in the lane. Put it up. And in. VanVleet lost it. And Jokic is hit in the face by Poeltl. And a foul.
Nuggets get the dub 118-113 over Toronto last night. There's a lot to take from this game. Certainly a lot to unpack. You know, it looked pretty rough at times off and on in that first half and, of course, in that final stretch in the fourth. But Denver hunkered down defensively. And a little interesting stuff going on with the officiating in this game. With Scott Foster and everything. Let's just get into it. Poll question of the day. Who's more important to the Nuggets at this point? Jamal Murray or Michael Porter Jr.? Listen, man. I mean, Murray's... They call it the Murray flurry, right? That's what Chris Marlowe... That call, of course, was from Altitude TV. Great work from them. Calls it the Murray flurry. Porter doesn't have a Murray flurry type of deal. He, for the most part this season, he's been pretty steady. So is it fair to classify Jamal Murray as kind of streaky? And this isn't an attack on Jamal today. This is just a poll question. You know, who's the most important to the Nuggets right now between those two guys? And Murray has a tendency to be a little bit streaky. Porter, what we've witnessed this year, is the growth of a trying to become more of a complete player. Will he ever be a complete player? Is he ever going to be the best ball handler, the best defensive player? Probably not, but this year he has made a stride to that. It's hard to argue with you, man. I might go Mike there.
Yeah, I mean, Jamal is a little streaky, or he has been as of late, but as streaky as he is, he's also might be the most clutch player on this team, because when it's down to the last few minutes and you need the offense to start running, you try to get that two-man game going with Jokic, Murray will just take a step back three and nail it in your face.
He does make some wild shots. Listen, they're both important. That's not... Whenever I ask a question like this, you get half the people that are like, why do we have to pick? Why are you... No, it's a fun debate. It's what sports is all about.
Jamal is streaky and clutch. MPJ is steady and effective.
Yeah, there you go. It's a t-shirt idea.
There you go.
Right there. Of course, Joker did his thing. He had a Sambor double. Barely missed that triple-double. Couldn't get that final assist. But defensively stepped up. A very key block with like a minute left in the game. That was critical. Defensively, Joker has silently stepped up. Get this. 92.7. That's their defensive rating. And that's third best since 2014. They're one of the best teams when it comes in clutch moments.
Yeah, within the last like 5 or so minutes, yeah. They're one of the best defensive teams.
And that's, you know what? Again, that's a testament to Michael Malone. Michael Malone was brought in to be a defensive coach, and a lot of people, you know, knocked that. And the Nuggets still give up some big scores. They give up some big quarters. But it does seem like when they have to buckle down in key stretches like that, clutch moments, I think they went like on an 18-9 run or something like that, 9-2 at the end stretch there.
Well, credit to Malone because his rotations were perfect in that last stretch.
They really were, because you saw Reggie Jackson, who had been struggling from from the 3-point line, whatever, just bad shots the last couple of games. Really hasn't got off to a great start, But Malone kind of noticed a little bit of a spark there and left him in with the starters, and he provided. He had 13 points. I was kind of at that point where I was going, you need a defensive spark, like with 5 minutes left. And again, I know Christian Brown's a rookie, and you don't always want to put rookies in those 5 minute marks, whatever. But I was waiting for some kind of a defensive spark. They weathered the storm there, and you're right. I think overall, I liked the lineup and how he was moving guys around there too. I also think guys like Jeff Green, we're seeing his hops because he's not playing as many minutes. He's an older guy. He's 36 years old, right? 36, 37. And, or I don't know, 34, 35. He's in the mid-30s, okay? And maybe less minutes for him has made him more, pack more of a punch when he's in.
His energy level is definitely up.
Yeah, like Bruce Brown didn't have a great night of shooting, but defensively he was really good. And Joker, I mean, he 5 of 8. Toronto was doing a lot to try to take Joker out of this game. You know, it was a collaborative effort to try to shut Joker down. And Joker found different ways to contribute. And that's what you want to see in your top studs and your players. And he ends up with pretty good stat line with 17 points, 13 rebounds and 13 rebounds and 9 assists, excuse me. Just missed that triple-double. But he found ways to come up with big plays in this game, especially that block late. But yeah, when you look at the really important playmakers that are going to make the difference, that game last year would have been a 14-point loss without Michael Porter Jr. and Jamal. Because when they start really working on the Joker, who is going to step up around him? And that wasn't there last year. And that wasn't always there even when Jamal and MPJ were healthy. Now, I want to see Michael Porter Jr. do this in the playoffs. That's going to be the big quest for him. He's starting to take it personally whenever they do push him. They do guard him up close to try to take that 3 shot away. But, man, he's got such a crisp shot.
Yeah, and he's, I think Katie said it on the broadcast, he's shooting so confidently right now.
No, quite, but not
and it's
silly.
Just, it's not know? A silly just random throw it up.
No.
It's, all right, I know I'm in my spot in the corner or wherever. I know I have the shot here. I'm not going to take it. I'm just going to pass it.
Yep.
And it's those decisions that Michael was making that's turning him into a better player.
There was a key shot. I don't know. Maybe it was like 6 minutes left in the fourth. But Porter cuts down. He sees Joker deep. He cuts down from the three-point line and pops out over a screen or under a screen to hit up right up on the free throw line extended. Just a quick little two. And Joker finds him wide open because Toronto was trying to push him off of the three-point line.
I think Jokic, you saw that early on and late into the second half, he started to adjust that in his play style. He was making the secondary pass, the hockey assist pass that he needed to make because he was, as soon as he got the ball, he's like they're on top of him, and he will just stand there and take the punishment and then just dish it off to the side. Aaron Gordon with another great performance, 19 points
just,
from him.
Just dunk it, you know, just get to the right spot and dunk it. I mean, it's easier said than done, but Dixon says, I feel like Murray's more important. He's the emotional leader, and to be honest, the Nuggets will need a few of those bubble Murray games to make it to the finals. I disagree about Porter being more consistent. Porter has shown he can be clutch or step up when needed in pressure situations. I feel like, and this is where I will knock Malone, sometimes I feel like he pulls Porter back too soon. He pulls him out too soon, and Porter has to struggle to kind of get back into the flow of things. Yes, Jamal Murray is built to force the issue. He's a point guard, so he can force himself upon the game. He can be the guy that says, all right, I'm gonna make something happen. Porter's not a point guard. He still relies very much on what Joker's doing and what Jamal's doing. I'm not necessarily saying who makes them a better player. Murray's probably pound for pound overall the better round overall player than MPJ. But, dude, it just feels like when Porter hits threes, they were down by like 9 going into the half almost, and then Porter goes off. And I just don't think he's as streaky, or at least what I've seen lately. Jamal Murray can be inconsistent. I mean, I think he had 6 points in the first half. It took him a while to get going, and then he hit 2 quick threes. Jamal did early in the game. Then it slowed down for him, and then he came back in the late second and was on fire.
I think MPJ has become more of an X factor for this team than Jamal Murray. Because you know what you're going to get with Murray and Jokic on the floor. MPJ makes you that much more dangerous because he can spreads, hit those big threes.
He spreads the floor out. And that's what do you have to do when you have Nikola Jokic, who is a pass-first guy? You have to have a player, maybe multiple players, that can really spread the floor out. Now, KCP's pretty good at that, obviously. Great, he's very efficient. He had a bad night last night. But MPJ, it's just a different feel when he gets going. It seems like this team, and then everything just opens up.
Does it feel more that he is a part of this team now?
Porter?
Yes.
Yeah, well, and Malone, you know, after the game was saying he took Porter aside and said how proud he was of him, of committing himself to play defense, of driving to the basket more, of just doing the little things rather than just hanging out in the corner and waiting for a three. We've seen that. And that's where, again, Porter hasn't had a rosy tenure with the Nuggets. I mean, you had the COVID stuff. He talked about that and kind of went off and said, hey, this is a conspiracy and all that stuff. I don't know exactly what he said, but Malone wasn't thrilled with that. They weren't thrilled. You know, in his rookie year, they barely played him. Once he was healthy, he didn't get a lot of minutes. So you had to go through a lot of growing pains with Michael Porter Jr. And I think Malone coached him hard. And now you're seeing, I don't want to say MPJ is a superstar. I don't want to say he's a star. I don't think there's any superstars on this team other than Joker. I think Jamal is a semi-star. But I think MPJ, if he can do this in the playoffs, that's what I got to see him do it in the playoffs. Then I think he will arrive to that star status. But he's an extremely important player. I said this years ago. I blogged it. That MPJ ultimately will be the most important, more important than Jamal Murray. And I think we're on the cusp of that right now. Murray, as much as I've built him up, he just hasn't quite got to that point where I really believed he could get. He shows flashes of it.
Yeah, I think, go back to my earlier point, he's just very clutch. And when you need a basket in the fourth quarter, if it's not Jokic, it's going to be Murray.
Well, yeah.
And, you know, MPJ hasn't really gotten a ton of those opportunities just because he's a little inexperienced in those clutch moments. But it's the shots he's making in the third quarter when you're down by 12, 15 points that keep you within the striking distance. And then Jamal and Jokic come on the floor and do what they do.
When the going gets tough in the playoffs, because that's what's going to happen, they're going to make adjustments, and they're going to try to run him off of the three-point line, that's where the big test for MPJ is going to be. In a best-of-seven series, what are you going to do when they make the proper adjustments to try to take you out of the game? And that's where you hope. You go, okay, well, now it's Joker time. That's what happens when you pair great three-point shooters with great passers, is that you kind of have to pick your poison. And the Nuggets certainly feel like they're at that stage. Now, there was some controversy last night, at least with the officiating, and we'll get into that. Now, I'm not going off where Tanner is. I'm just saying makeup calls exist. Makeup calls are a part of basketball. They always will be, love it or not. You had, what's his face? Was it Scott Foster? Is that the ref? He was asked about it, or the officials were asked about it and everything. Why was Scottie Barnes ejected at the end of the game? He said he was ejected on one technical foul because he used verbiage that which directly questioned the integrity of the crew. Now, again, here's where we can't really speak on it. We don't know what he said. He must have said something pretty bad because they didn't waste any time. One T and you're out. I don't know what he said. The refs aren't going to tell us. I don't know if Scottie Barnes is going to tell us. But he must have said one of the no-no words that you're not supposed to say. Must have been pretty damn bad.
Yeah, and even if it's like under his breath a little bit, if the ref hears it and it's directed towards that official, you're gone.
Yeah. I mean, there's just certain things you can't do. And there are such things as makeup calls. Were they favorable for the Nuggets toward the end, more so than Toronto? Absolutely. They were. But that's the state of the game. I mean, on any given night, you can say any given team was favored a little bit more with this call here, this call there. It's just how this game goes.
And there were the two challenges late in that game. One by Nick Nurse challenged it, failed.
Failed.
Malone challenged it, got hit.
Because, again, Joker's hand hits the ball simultaneously hitting the player's hand. Was it Fred Van Fleet? Whose hand was that?
It was the tall guy. Pirtle.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Pirtle. I love Pirtle. The hand is a part of the ball. If you slapped the hand over the top of the ball it's a foul. But if you hit the ball and the hand kind of at the same time, it is not a foul. And then there was a push-off offensively after the first initial contact, which is what they called. And then Joker's hand brushed down and combed over his hand, which then you could say was a foul. I thought it could have gone either way. If they wouldn't have called a foul and then they reviewed it, I didn't think they would it would stand. The same thing. So this was one of those calls where thought it could go either way. It went the Nuggets' way. Were they given? I mean, I don't think Scott, like Tanner's point this morning on Good Morning Yoko was Scott Foster decided he wanted the Nuggets to, like, how did he say that? I don't know. I'm not going to go there.
It was kind of like he gave the Nuggets the opportunity to just put the game away.
Yeah, I'm not going to go there. Because even on that LeBron foul, the one where he freaked out, I don't think the refs were like, let's cause the Lakers to lose.
No, and the Raptors still had two shots on the basket to tie or potentially win that game late.
That's critical stuff happening in the last few minutes of this game. Just absolutely critical. Let's get to the good, the bad, the ugly, presented by FMS Bank. Banking made simple. That was a pretty good night. I mean, I got a couple of good stories. Colorado State Rams women's team won. They'll be playing Wyoming tonight for Border War 3 coming up. That's going to be a knockdown, drag-out fight. I think that's at 8:30 tonight. But also the Nuggets and the defense late by Denver. You know, you can't talk about this defense enough, the way they've stepped up in clutch moments. Let's just say the bad is NBA officiating. Because they are inconsistent. And again, I'm not going all the way in on either side of this. I don't think Scott Foster was like, uh-oh, we went against Joker once. Let's make it up to him and give him the dub. But
when has that ever happened?
It doesn't happen like that. And again, we can get into the whole individual refs, could they be, whatever. But that's not what this was last night. However, the fact that we do have these debates, and we just know that there are makeup calls. That part sucks, because there was probably some makeup calling going on. That happens in basketball, and I don't love that that happens in basketball, but it is such as life. The ugly is not a local story, but this Ja Morant thing is getting pretty ugly for Memphis. He's going to cost them, and I'm not saying they were a favorite to win the title this year, but he's going to cost them the shot. He's going to cost them a shot this year. If they find out that he traveled with that gun, he's out for at least 50 games. If they find out that he was it Shotgun Willie's? Is that what we found out?
Yes.
That was where he was, Shotgun Willie's.
Mm-hmm.
Place is famous, man. If we find out that he was drinking and had a gun, but again, he can't be showing the gun off. Even if he's sober, he can't be flashing the gun in there, right?
Right.
So a lot of people are like, well, how do we know he's drunk? And I even said that yesterday. But you still can't, like, what world is it okay where you just go in and you're just holding up a gun and showing a gun off?
I mean,
you can't do that.
If you're at a strip club at 5 a.m. and you're not drinking, I have concerns.
If you're going to go to a strip club, you might as well make it worth it, man, and get hammered. Steven Adams, though, apparently, like, had a meeting with the team before before they went out and said, basically, hey, not just going out after games, but going out on the road. We need to be disciplined. We got to take care of each other. We got to watch out because this is where you can get into trouble.
That was after the game.
He said it after the game and before Ja Morant went out. Message not received by your team leader, by your best player, by one of the best players in the league. What route does he take this? I don't know. Where does he go from here? That's going to be on him, but he's running with a crowd that he shouldn't be running with. I don't know all the details, but I don't know if he's gangster or whatever, but he's doing something that he shouldn't be doing.
I saw this interesting tweet yesterday. So apparently his dad travels with him and the team kind of separately. Is it possible his dad was just holding the gun for him so it's not technically with the team while they're traveling? And he goes out at night and says, hey, dad, I need my piece or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that could be a possible loophole for Morant.
Wow.
But also, why is your dad traveling with you for every game and is a part of your entourage?
Is it Russell Wilson's quarterback coach? Is that what this is?
Yikes.
Dixon says, Brady, as an official, I guess I would like to know how you know there are makeup calls in basketball. I mean, how many NBA games did you officiate, Dixon? I mean, you don't make up calls in high school, bro. Of course not. Last I checked, Nikola Jokic doesn't play for, you know, the Eaton Reds. In the NBA, there are absolutely makeup calls. Watch any broadcast and you will hear, that's a makeup call. That's real.
It's an interesting conversation because we normally get on here and say, oh, Jokic never gets a call. Now he gets one and it's, oh, now they're making it up.
No, I think that makeup calls are real for superstars. Dixon, are you doubting that referees do not cater calls to superstars in the league? Because if you are, we got a serious problem on our hands. You mean to tell me you don't think that LeBron James has ever been given a call? He goes up, there's not really contact, but he misses it badly, and the ref just calls a foul. Maybe he missed it on the other end, so he gave... Yeah, that happens, dude. Have I talked to an NBA ref about this? No, but it happens. This absolutely happens. By saying that you're basically questioning the integrity of officials. I mean, there was one thrown in prison for fixing games. You don't think that a referee has a makeup call once in a while?
I think their integrity should always be questioned.
Yeah, dude. And Dixon, I'm not knocking you. Seriously, all kidding aside, Dixon is the arch nemesis of the show. He is a terrible, terrible, terrible human. But I have heard good things about his officiating. He's actually not a terrible human. He's just, you know, he's a negative hooligan. I'm not like saying every referee is bad, but yes. And they don't make up calls in high school. I don't think so. Maybe they do, but I don't imagine. College, maybe it happens. NBA, it definitely happens. It absolutely happens. We got a lot to get to today. Perkins is at it again. J.J. Redick is at it again. We've got that clip coming for you. We'll talk about that on the other side. It's the whole show powered by PDC Energy on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Start your day with Good Morning NoCo with Brian Gary and Tanner Schwint on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Brian Howell, Colorado Buffalo's beat writer for the Buff Zone, and you are listening to the whole show on 1310 KFKA.
Okay, it's Top Text Tuesday today, and I really want great texts. We got a lot of stuff happening in the sports world. Eastside Chris, this could win it already. Morant should have gone to the Den. It's a little more relaxed environment. Is it really? Is it relaxed? Eastside Chris, you know that for sure? Shotgun Willies ain't got nothing on the Den, man.
Well, it's Handgun Willies now.
Oh, is it Handgun Willies?
Yes.
Picture Ja Morant up there. First Advantage text line, 888-530-0043. Our poll question of the day, who is more important to the Nuggets today, right now, Jamal Murray or Michael Porter Jr.? Also, Angel asked me during the break if I trade for Derrick Henry. What am I giving up? And he said, would you open up the discussion? Yes, I am having that discussion today, tomorrow, and six times on Sunday. Derrick Henry, as a Denver Bronco, would just make me so happy. I would love that. What am I giving up? I don't want to give up Patrick Surtain. We don't have any first, so hopefully they're good with a third. We have a third, right? Two-thirds. Would I give up two-thirds for Derrick Henry? Gah! I hate giving up all these draft picks, but Derrick
Henry...
Without
an O-line, Derrick Henry isn't much.
Yeah, that's also true. Let's talk about it. We got Zach Stevens coming up next, DNVR Broncos, 32 minutes after the hour. It's the whole show powered by PDC Energy. Let's get the latest on the local sports flash.
What's up, hooligans? This is Zach Stevens with DNVR Broncos, and you're listening to the whole show on 1310 KFKA.
I mean, the whole Derrick Henry thing, I don't know. I don't know. I've been pretty consistent on I hate giving up all these draft picks. That's probably what it would take. What does Zach Stevens think about this? Zach Stevens, DNVR Broncos, our Broncos insider. First off, is Derrick Henry really on the trade block, Zach? And if so, should the Broncos be somewhat interested?
You know what? There's reports, Brady, that they are open to trading him now. It doesn't seem like they're just going to give him away, and that probably takes the Broncos out of the equation. Look, Derrick Henry is on a very team-friendly deal. 1 year left on his deal, $10 million. Are you kidding me? For a difference maker like that, if you could trade him, you'd do it in a heartbeat if you're the Broncos. In my opinion, especially because of where the Broncos running back situation stands, what the Broncos need right now is either – a replacement for Javonte Williams if they don't believe that he's ever going to be come back for, from this injury, or they need someone that can be a long-term fill-in for him. Look, I do not believe Javonte Williams is going to be healthy for the regular season. In fact, he may not be healthy for this entire next season with just the severity of his injury. So if you think that he's going to be able to come back, but it's not going to be able until the middle of the season or really 2024, then Derrick Henry is the perfect replacement for him. However, I think that the Titans, if they do move on from him, will be able to get a late first-round pick, a second-round pick for him. And the Broncos just simply don't have that to give this year. If they could move him for a third, oh, you do that in a heartbeat, Brady, in my opinion. That would not only help the offense, but that would be Russell Wilson's best friend in order to try to become who he is. What did he do really well in Seattle? He worked off a running game and had good defense. If they're able to bring Derrick Henry in, there would be no one better for him to rely on and then be able to work off play action like he did so well in Seattle. So that would just be a no-brainer for me. But, Brady, you're not going to be trading a future one for him or probably even a future second-round pick for him. I think there's other teams that would give up at least a second that probably make more sense. But in a dream world, oh, man, would Derrick Henry be great.
Yeah, and I know the Titans are trying to figure their salary cap situation out. So the idea of trading players like big contracts, because I know, you know, Cortland Sutton's name is in the rumor mill as well. But, you know, I don't think the Titans would look at that because, you know, let's take on more money for a player that's, you know, he's fine. Cortland Sutton's fine. But I don't think so. You're right. It'd have to be draft picks. And the Broncos simply just don't have them.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, if the Titans were to trade Derrick Henry, it would be more of a rebuilding situation for them than taking on a Cortland Sutton. So you're spot on with that, Brady.
Well, and I really like Javonte Williams. And again, that doesn't mean you can't have both of them working together. We still don't know for sure. You talked about it last week as far as realistically, will he be ready by the start of the season or at some point midseason, whatever, even though Broncos brass seems to think that he will be. But man, you look at Derrick Henry, and I know he's getting up there. It's crazy. He's already getting up there, but he's still proven. And you're right. A guy like that would help Russell Wilson. It would be so much fun to see that combo, but it doesn't seem realistic. On the Cortland Sutton side, Zach, is that really something that's moving? Are we? Because you think about it, if Jerry Jeudy can take the next step, which we started to see the end of last season, and then Tim Patrick coming back, does it make sense to have Cortland Sutton on this roster?
Yeah, George Payton talked about it 1 week ago from today at the Combine, Brady, about how they're always looking for picks, and especially not having a first-round pick or a second-round pick this year. You kind of have to find the sweet spot in terms of players you're willing to trade in order to get draft picks back. Look, you're not going to trade a backup for a seventh-round pick. I mean, they might do that, but, I mean, that's not the type of picks that George Payton's talking about when he's talking about acquiring more picks. But then also, you're not going to trade Pat Surtain for a first-round pick. You're going to hang on to Pat Surtain. So it's about finding those guys that are going to get value while also not kill your team and your future by trading him. And you look at Cortland Sutton, if you can get a second-round pick back for him, boy, that would be hard to pass up because then you would have a second-round pick to use on an offensive lineman, which is probably where the Broncos need to shift their attention to. Instead of these skill position players, they need to be looking at the line. So that's something that would make sense. Can you get a second-round pick back for him? Maybe, but probably more of a third-round pick, and George Payton's done very well with those third-round picks, so maybe they think that's something that's worth it. What's going to be tough with Cortland Sutton is the dead cap. The Broncos have about an average amount of cap space compared to other NFL teams right now, sitting right around $10 million in cap space. They're going to open some more up by making some moves, by either restructuring guys or moving on from guys. Ronald Darby pops to the top of that list, as well as Graham Glasgow. They could open up about $20 million between those guys. So they will have cap room. But if you move on from Cortland Sutton, it's going to be a lot of dead cap. So that's the reason why you wouldn't just dump him, where you'd need to get something in return.
Yeah, that one's really interesting too, because I really like Sutton too. A lot of these guys I really like, but maybe injuries, whatever, they just haven't got up to that point. Plus, you got a new regime in here, and Zach, I mean, it just feels like Tim Patrick, aside from the injury, became more of the reliable receiver. And I kind of like that combo of him being the reliable one, Jerry Jeudy being the big playmaker. And again, I don't know if it makes sense, but we'll see what happens on that side of it. You see a lot of those guys, like Darby you just mentioned, Graham Glasgow, those guys, those names that are okay players, but maybe they don't make sense anymore, especially with Sean Payton coming in. He's trying to make room, and he wants to start bringing more and more guys that are, you know, of his liking, more of his guys.
Yeah, exactly, and that's it. You need to give Sean Payton all of the resources that he needs to bring in his guys. And so you look at it, Broncos can save nearly $10 million if they decided to move on from Garrett Bowles. I don't think they're going to do that, but that's a name that you can't ignore, $10 million in savings. I don't expect that one to happen. Graham Glasgow, if they just straight up cut him, $11 million in savings. And then you get to some other names, which aren't as big of savings, but add up. Lloyd Cushenberry, the Broncos could save nearly $3 million there. Brandon McManus, $2.5 million if they move on from him. Chase Edmonds, a no-brainer. They would save $6 million by moving on from him. That he's not going to be brought back at that number. They're either going to rework his deal to save some money, or they're going to save $6 million. And then on the defensive side, Mike Purcell, you can save $3.5 million. Jacob Martin, you can save nearly $4 million. Josie Jewell, $5 million. And then Ronald Darby, who we talked about, nearly $10 million if you move on from him. So there are a lot of names that are on this team, Brady, that you expect the Broncos to start reworking deals or just move on from in the next week, because free agency starts next Monday unofficially.
What are you hearing as far as potential free agents coming in? I saw Josh Jacobs was given the franchise tag, and just a bunch of names out there. We're seeing what teams are going to do with them, tagging them, releasing them, whatever. But what are you hearing as far as the rumors around, you know, any attractive free agents that the Broncos might be looking at?
Yeah, really two positions to really keep your eye on, Brady, and they're both on the offensive side of the ball. We've talked about one of them already, running back. That is something to not sleep on. And it's just going to be, they're going to bring in a running back this offseason. It's going to just be, okay, and what they do at running back is going to tell us what they truly, truly think of Devontae Williams. Kareem Hunt was a name that was thrown out there at the combine last week, to a name to keep an eye on. And then if they go running back, there's a lot of guys out there. Tony Pollard, obviously not on the market anymore. Miles Sanders, another name that's really connected to Denver to keep an eye on. Those would be more of, you know, a big time move at running back, which would not be the best news for Javonte Williams' future. And then the other position that you have to keep an eye on, which the Broncos are going to attack in free agency, is the offensive line. What are they going to do with the offensive line? Is it going to be signing one of the big tackles out there, McGarry, McGlinchey, Orlando Brown, who's going to hit the market? There's also some good guards out there. Powers is a really good guard. Dalton Reisner's obviously available and going to hit the market as well. So I expect a couple of moves made on the offensive line.
So free agency, we're looking at, okay, offensive line, running back. Maybe we can get two solid players there that really help out. And then are you looking, obviously that doesn't mean they're done. They can get, you know, more of those C-grade guys, whatever, down the road in free agency that might be cheaper. But how much work or how much emphasis are they going to be putting into this draft as far as guys they think can potentially help them as soon as next season? Because it's going to be difficult without those firsts and seconds.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be difficult without those firsts and seconds. And like I said earlier, George Payton has done well in the third round, and he's going to have to be great in the third round. He's going to have to get two starters or at least two guys that are going to have big-time impacts. And look, they're going to get, I would imagine, one guard in the third round, and that person has to be a starter right away. And then the other position they go for, whether it's defensive line, whether it's tackle, is going to have to be a contributor right away. And George Payton said it last week. He said, man, that the prime spot of this draft is the top five picks in the third round. Coincidentally, probably not coincidentally, the Broncos have two picks in those top five. It's pretty wild that he would say that. But to me, that says, okay, if you're really saying that, and he didn't laugh when he said it, but I'm sure it was a little tongue-in-cheek, but then that means you just got to hit on both of those picks.
I mean, and this is where, okay, let me ask you this question. George Payton, Sean Payton, who's really in control of the drafts? I mean, when it comes down to it, who's really making the decision?
Yeah, it's going to be Sean Payton. This is Sean Payton's team. And I imagine that this year, Sean's really going to be relying on George, especially because they don't have first and second round picks, especially because George has been looking at this draft for, you know, almost a year, where Sean Payton's really just diving in now. So I really do expect it to be a team philosophy. But if it comes down to, you know, a player or a position, at the end of the day, Sean Payton's here making $20 million and having that big deal, where George is, you know, he's brought here to be really a player evaluator now. So I expect them to be working hand in hand, but really I expect it to be, at the end of the day, Sean's decision.
Zach, tell me if I'm wrong. I probably am. It happens a lot. Does this feel just kind of like not a stopgap, maybe that's not the right word, but you know what? Sean Payton's getting into all of this. He's looking at the draft. He's got a lot to do, so he really needs to lean on George Payton, as you said. And then as he gets more comfortable with everything and we get through next season, no matter what really happens, playoffs or not, does it seem like maybe the Broncos would move on from George Payton? Because it still seems like they have two guys at the top almost in some respects.
Yeah, Brady, I can't sleep on that possibility happening. For really, the next time I'm going to feel comfortable that George Payton is going to be here for the long term is if he's still here in 2 years, because there is a possibility that Sean Payton decides to bring in his own general manager, and that could happen as soon as after this draft. It could also happen after this coming season, and especially if moves don't work out on the personnel side, then Sean could definitely say, I need to bring my own guy in. This isn't working with George. But if George makes it really through the next two seasons, then I'll feel comfortable that he's going to be the guy. But that's a long ways away. So I'm right there with you, Brady. I'm just waiting to see if Sean decides to bring in his own guy.
Zach, what's this deal with Melvin Gordon coming after you guys, man? What's going on that on Twitter, dude? I mean, you talk about the possibilities of getting big-time players like Barkley and Henry, and Melvin Gordon saying now you guys are off of Javonte Williams. I mean, what is that about?
Yeah, you know, Melvin, when he left Denver last year, he went after the fans. And, you know, on our podcast, we I think, have been very fair about Melvin Gordon in the running back position. And when I say fair, I mean when he did things well and was scoring touchdowns, we gave him credit. But also, Brady, he led the league in fumbles at an alarming rate. And so we got after him, and he certainly hurt us for that. We try to be fair to the fans, not necessarily, just complete homers or anything. And so, you know, he thought we were moving on from Javonte on Twitter, which certainly isn't the case. But you also have to be realistic with where Javonte is, Brady. I know George Payton was optimistic that Javonte will be ready to go week one. I don't expect that to be the case. And you know what? Javonte may not be 100% until the end of the season. And with Javonte Williams, he's still young enough where there is just no reason to rush him back, especially for this upcoming season. The Broncos aren't in a Super Bowl or bust window right now. If things go well, they may be entering that playoff conversation this year and then maybe having their eyes on the AFC Championship game Super Bowl window in 2024. And if you could have Javonte Williams 100% for that, that's what I'm looking at. So you got to take a step back here when you're looking at these injuries and when you're looking at this roster, because, Brady, the Broncos aren't in a Super Bowl window right now.
It's the nature of the beast. We love Javonte Williams. Unfortunately, an injury shut him down, and we still were like, okay, can he's a good rookie. Can he take the next step? Well, the injury didn't allow that question to be answered. So you have to have these discussions. So great job by you, my man. And just keep your dukes up just in case. Just be ready.
Hey, I appreciate it, Brady.
All right, Zach, my man. We'll let you rock and roll. Appreciate you as always, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Right on. I look forward to it. Thanks, Brady.
Thanks, man. Zach Stevens, DNVR Broncos. Yeah, Melvin Gordon's going at him. He's like, now you're all off of 33. Boy, you all ain't-ish. Probably the bad word, I'm guessing. You all hold podcasts. I don't know what all that means, but we have to have the discussions. Javonte Williams, I love. I said at the beginning of the season last year, I think he's going to be a gigantic piece to the puzzle. He got hurt. So unfortunately, there still is a question mark about what kind of running back he can be. And if you want Russell Wilson to ever get back to what he can be, what he was in Seattle, You have to have a solid running game. Yes, it starts with the offensive line, but you also have to have a formidable running back in the back as well. 11:52 the time. Let's take a short break. It's the whole show powered by PDC Energy. Let's read text on the other side. It's Top Text Tuesday, a $15 gift certificate up for grabs from Cable's Pub and Grill here in Greeley. So get them in. First Advantage text line, 888-530-0043. We'll be right back. It's the whole show live from the Aloe Fiber Studios.
Start your day with Good Morning NoCo with Brian Gary and Tanner Schwint on Northern Colorado's Voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Hey, it's Andrew Bogish from CBS Sports Radio. You're listening to the whole show on 1310 KFKA.
I got a good rest of the show coming up. Mike Brohard, my friend from CSURams.com, this women's team going at it tonight against Wyoming. Border War 3, take 3. We'll see how they do there. Taking down a team like Boise State 3 times in a season is difficult. So congratulations to Colorado State. We're going to have Nico Medved on the program, CSU head basketball coach. They've got Fresno State tomorrow. That'll be at noon. So that'll be right here during the show. Angel, have you thought about our idea? We're gonna turn the game on. And we're just gonna talk about it. We don't have to broadcast. We just talk about it. Ooh, I like that play. That's a good play.
That could be fun.
I mean, we could still talk about other things.
We could be descriptive of it.
Yeah,
the team in the green uniform scored.
Yes,
I believe that's number 4.
We just can't full on call it. Yeah. Like, you can't just broadcast it. But we can talk about it. We can do that.
The Rams may or may not have just made a 3.
Yeah. The Rams, we're not there, so we can't have say, just won the game.
Sources say.
Holyoke, this is a good one. Where is it? Murray and Joker are the peanut butter and jelly sandwich with Porter in the mix. Now you have a refrigerated Uncrustable. So in my opinion, Murray is more important, but Porter currently tastes better.
That's what I had for lunch today.
An Uncrustable?
2 of them.
Those are actually surprisingly good. They're looked
amazing
awful
and they're
to me. Yeah, they looked terrible, though, but they're actually really good. That's a good take. Is that take going to be Eastside Chris's Den versus Shotgun Willies or Handgun Willies? Is that going to beat it? I don't know. Top Text Tuesday rolls on. Bring your best stuff. Lunch Rush is coming up next. We'll be right back.